This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 at the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and this, of course, is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. Coming up on today's show, we have a car review of the Hyundai Ioniq, which Daniel managed to take for a test spin. Something about why a bunch of Malaysians won't be buying it. In our AT&T section, a little bit later on, we'll be talking about GPS and the stock navigation system that comes with your car. But in the meantime, let's take a little snooze and have some news with Arif Ruse. Welcome to the show, Arif.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well. Daniel will be joining us for today's news section as well. We're going to have a bit of a discussion later on about a topic that's close to many Malaysians' hearts.
Yes,
right?
Yep.
Yes, right.
Hot topic.
But first things first, last week over the weekend, there was the Le Mans 24 Hours, and three Malaysian drivers made the top 10.
They made
the top 10 in the overall standings. They were Nabil Jeffrey, Jasman Jaffar, and Weiron Tan. They drove a car sponsored by Jackie Chan himself, car number 37.
Did they have the image of Jackie Chan like they do with the shampoo stuff?
No, but Richard, this is not Jackie Chan, the guy who sells
food. It's not that Jackie Chan.
Food in Section 17.
It's
no.
Other Jackie.
This is actor.
Right, okay, gotcha.
Fantastic job.
I hope they're going to the Nürburgring soon for the 24 hours there. Anyway, updates on the Dieselgate scandal. Volkswagen Group is fined 1 billion euros by German prosecutors. More than 25 billion euros in damages has already been paid, and people are saying it's going to increase.
Okay.
And adding to that, this week, Audi CEO Rupert Stadler has been arrested in Germany over his alleged role in Dieselgate scandals.
I always love when they use that word, alleged. Right?
But you know what gets me is, I'm just curious here. I mean, you know, you're arresting someone over emissions.
Mm.
Okay, yes, he cheated. It's more like a commercial crime.
I'm suspecting that a lot of people could be arrested for emissions on Sunday afternoon.
But they make it sound so serious.
Right.
You know, which I think is great because, you know, the environment and everything else.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of our people,
yeah, we'll just leave that
are
there,
getting away with a lot.
Right. We could have a lot of Gates. Yes. Let's put it that way. Okay, speaking of Gates and scandals,
Anthony Lowe, the Minister of Transport, revealed that these special number plates issued by NGOs such as, you know, 1M4U, VIP or Patriot had actually cost the government almost 20 million ringgit in lost revenue for each series. Yeah, so he says, and I quote, "It's difficult to estimate the leakages. An NGO would pay the government about a million ringgit to get the plate and then resell it for roughly 20 million per series."
I know a few people with the 1M4U license plate.
Exactly.
They're expensive then.
Yes, yeah. It is.
My word.
Yeah.
All right, move on then. So have we had any new car launches worth talking about?
New car launches, we've got just the Mercedes-Benz E-Class facelift. The E200 is basically trimmed up and...
Tarted up. Just to keep the punters excited.
So the E200 starts at 315,000 and the range tops out with the E350e at 370,000 ringgit.
That sounded like a mouthful. That sounded like a mouthful. Okay, so this is the big deal that we wanted to talk about. The National Car 3.0.
Yeah,
Arif, you know, this was hitting the newspapers quite heavily. It was all over the press. You know, there's lots of... we saw him talking an awful lot. Well, that's not a change. But tell us more about it. Come on.
So 2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, announced something controversial at the 24th Nikkei conference, which we all know is that he talked about making yet another national car.
Our ambition is to start another national car, perhaps with some help from our partners in Southeast Asia.
Oh, so that this is a different version of the car, probably somebody from Thailand or like the other countries.
Yes, from Thailand or the other countries, but also from Japan, China, Korea. Mm-hmm. Because obviously you have that capacity to produce good quality cars which are saleable throughout the world market. Mm-hmm. We want to access the world market.
Uh-huh.
Yep, so what did you guys think about that?
Well, he's talking about having help from outside, right?
Yeah.
And whether it be the Southeast Asian region. Haven't Proton already got help from somebody, just not necessarily in the Southeast Asian region? Why do we need to find somebody else?
Okay, to start with, when I first heard about this, like a lot of Malaysians and a lot of people in the auto industry, I was not happy at
right.
all. Because we know how much leaked out with Proton.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it and I said, this man is not talking nonsense.
Right. Because I last agree with week, him. You had a different opinion.
Yes. But I thought about it. And I agree with him now. But it'll only work. Mm. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me. But it'll only work if, number one, they go full electric. That means he finds a partner that does a full electric car. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, he has to find a partner that doesn't have a presence Southeast Asia or the greater part of Southeast Asia. Number three, this partner must be able to deliver a sedan, SUV, MPV, a small commercial van, and a small one-ton truck.
Well, you're not asking for much. All electric.
All electric, because this is the most common range of vehicles.
Right, yeah.
The next thing is this partner must have in plan already a battery system.
Mm.
So I would like to suggest, if Tun Mahathir will take me on as an advisor,
of course, yeah,
to talk to a company in China called Link and Co.
Link and Co.
LYNK and Co. Now, why Link and Co? Number one, Link and Co is a child of Geely.
He's not like that, is he?
Now, yes, Geely has come into Proton. Whether he likes it or not, this is for the good of Malaysia. Now, Geely already have people here working in Proton trying to make all things in our work profitable. Geely understands how Malaysians work. They understand the infrastructure, language, transportation, blah, blah, blah. Everything is there already because they have people here from China. And these people have already gone into the system.
Right.
So now, if you go to Geely and say, listen, let's talk about Link and Co. Bring them here as a third national car, because Link and Co. has just started production in China. But all left-hand drive.
Uh-huh.
So they're not ready for the ASEAN market.
Okay.
So if they come and joint venture with, say, the Malaysian Third National Car Program, they can straight away start producing right-hand drive. You can straight away sell this product for the greater ASEAN region. Mm. You can even go up to India and Bangladesh and Pakistan and Afghanistan and all these areas. Now, this means you have a whole new area for Link and Co. to sell their products in joint venture with Malaysia. Now, if you get a full electric car and you give the preferential treatment, no Malaysian is going to get upset. That's right. Number one. Number two, if you do this, immediately you create a new range of jobs for people in the computer industry, tech industry, and also the battery industry, which Malaysia now has a great benefit because we have solar power.
Right.
I totally get what you say, but then there's that question of infrastructure. You know, Malaysia is nowhere close enough to support electric cars yet.
But isn't that the idea, though? You know, you want a new car. You want it to kind of leave a mark. You need to do something special. You need to sit down and go, you know what? Let's do something completely new. It's a new Malaysia. This is what we're focusing on. Our new car is going to be entirely electric.
True, but actually, after this announcement, the rest of the government didn't really reciprocate these ambitions. I mean, Lim Guan Eng, the finance minister, came out to say that there are no funds for this project and it should be funded by the private sector. Dr. M did say that this call to make a new national car came from the private sector.
Mm.
And the Anthony Lok's Ministry of Transport is still committed to solving public transport problems, which, from what I'm reading and seeing, none of what's being officially said so far has provided any sort of clarity to what Dr. Mahathir meant with this announcement. And everyone is equally as confused and speculating on whatever he said previously in the Nikkei conference. The gravity of his announcement really comes from where he was, which is, you know, in Tokyo. It's a global stage attended by almost all of the Asian countries, and Dr. Mahathir isn't known to announce something to the world without being prepared. Yeah, so one of the biggest emphasis that Dr. Mahathir placed on the car is, you know, it could bring up Malaysia's engineering capabilities.
Right, Daniel just
like you said.
Yeah.
But the question I have is, should we wait for Geely's plans with Proton to materialize? Because they have so many plans. And, you know, Geely's track record with Volvo, they basically turned Volvo from mom's car to the coolest car, forward-thinking car in the world. So what do you think?
You see, Geely and Proton is a totally different program than what I'm talking about. What Tun Mahathir is trying to say is, okay, let Geely and Proton go ahead. They will build hybrid cars. They will build petrol-driven cars. That deal was done before he came into power. And also, Geely has never had a footprint in Asia. They've always had only China and some parts of Europe. So Malaysia is a base for them to move into their right-hand drive market. Same story as Link & Co. Mm. They don't have a footprint here at all. And at the moment, Link & Co. is only building 1.5-liter hybrid engines. That means you got a petrol engine and you got a battery power system. But the plan is within a year to go full electric. So this is why I'm saying it's a great initiative, because if you talk to them right now, if you get plans going right now. You got 1 year to get your factory up and going in Malaysia, not to build the car completely, more like a CKD. Let's not fool around with this. When Malaysia had the first national car, Proton, and then after the second national car, Perdua came along, it was all joint ventures with a partner, that it was more like a CKD with local content.
Right.
That's the best way to do things. Don't reinvent the wheel. So like with Link & Co now, let them do all the engineering, bring it over here, put it together here with local components, local expertise, and then you get jobs, you get a lot of things going. Now, imagine if you don't do this. Say, now I'm not hired as the advisor for this. Mm-hmm. Where do you think...
You've been fired already.
Yes. Where do you think Link & Co is going to go if they want the ASEAN market?
Right.
Good chance, Indonesia or Thailand?
Yeah, Thailand, yeah.
Thailand is going to be the first choice because they've got the hub already. Indonesia is slowly getting there. Now, if they do this, we have lost the game completely. This is our last opportunity to get into the game and full electric power plants.
Okay, but what about Perodua? Where would they stand in this whole scheme of things?
Perodua is still far away from its full electric thing.
Right.
Even hybrid, they're still far away. Let them keep making small cars, make it as cheap as possible, which they're doing, and letting Malaysians migrate from a motorcycle to a car, or let retirees own their last car.
What about stuff like excise duties? You know, would that... If we're bringing in a third car company, how could we change? Or would that be affected? Would excise duties be affected?
Don't affect, because why? It's full electric. Full
of
electric.
Course,
you've already
course.
Got that concession there. So you're not, you know, juddering the economy, or you're not upsetting anyone.
But I feel like Malaysia needs to solve all of our current issues with the automotive landscape here. You know, we've got the approval permits, we've got poor driver's education, we've got dated legislations and poor policing and law enforcement and poorer conditions. I think... These should be the ones that we should be attending to first, rather than, you know, approaching a new national car brand, which is just time wasting, I think.
All right, final word from Arif Ruz there. You know, it's all about time wasting.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Coming up in just a moment, it's our AT&T segment, where we're talking about the GPS system inside your car. You're listening to Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to BFM 89.9. This is Cruise Control, the car show. Our next segment, it is AT&T. When was the last time you used the navigation system that came with your car?
Auto technology and tips brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
I'm joined in the studio by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Talk to me about GPS navigation systems.
Exactly.
This sounds really exciting.
Right. You know, I still remember 12, 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
When we went overseas, foreign countries, to test drive cars, and they just gave us a car and they said, okay, here's your start and we'll meet you at the end, which is 600 kilometers away. And we're thinking, how are we going to get there? So in the early days, we had road books.
Big
road
old maps. Yeah.
And you know, it was fun, because every now and then you stop and you ask people for directions, and you know, language is a barrier.
Little arguments between you and your co-driver.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, some people just ignore you because they look at you, hey, you look a little bit different. Some will come up to you and say, yeah, we can help you. Some will even show you to the next junction.
Uh-huh.
Great. But then, as the years progressed, cars started having in-car navigation.
Right.
And we were just blown away, because Malaysia didn't have it. Our smartphones didn't have it. When we saw this, we were like, you know, whoa, it's, you know, military technology in our car. And this was great. It was great until the point where I started realizing navigation in the car today, I believe, is obsolete.
Okay, give your side of the argument, and I may have something to add a little bit later on.
Okay. In the last few years, I test drive between 25 to 30 new cars a year, okay? Whether they're Japanese, Korean, German, Italian, all these cars come with navigation. Even the lowest spec Malaysian-made car now comes with, you know, navigation. And of course, it's third-party navigation. Some of them have their own. The bigger cars have their own, the more expensive cars. But a lot of them have navigation. Now, when we get into these cars, we want to try the navigation. Because why? It's a feature that is highlighted in the brochure, in the price.
It's flashy.
Yes.
It's something you want to try. Yeah.
And they always say, oh, you know, you have a 7-inch screen or 8-inch screen, and, you know, there's navigation, and, you know, you can try, and we've got the latest mapping system, and we've got the latest way of doing things and all that. And then in the more expensive cars, they even have touchscreen panel, voice command. I started realizing the last few years that I'm not bothered with this navigation simply because it's too tedious to navigate through the system to get to your navigation point.
You're right. Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, the voice navigation, it all started with, you know, brands like Ford and Mercedes. It was great in the beginning because you know why? My kids will come in the car and start shouting out orders, you know, McDonald's, where can I go and get roti canai, you know, and then the navigation goes all crazy. But then when we sit down and seriously go through the navigation, there's a little bit of accent problem. There's a little bit of pronunciation problem. So when we talk to the product planners, they say, oh, you know, you must speak clearly. You must speak properly. As it gets more updated, yes, it's a lot easier for me to use now. But I still see a lot of people with a slight twinge in their accent having problems.
Yeah.
And of course now, like recently we test drove a car in Europe, and that car had fantastic voice commands, fantastic. We tried to even change our voices and it picked up. But you always have to do it maybe two or three times. The first time it just doesn't work. Two or three times it works. So I'm saying now, here are reasons I think why in-car navigation should be retired from the whole spectrum. Most new cars today come with built-in navigation system, but a lot of it has frustrated owners who just end up using their smartphones instead for directions, because we all have smartphones. Second, the tedious way of going through the menu system. You're taking your eyes off the road.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you want to do it before you start off, but maybe now you're driving somewhere and then suddenly someone says, oh, you got to meet me at this place. If you got your smartphone, you can pick it up and you can quickly scroll through and do it, but with in-car navigation, you can't do that. Number three, voice commands are still misunderstood and you have to keep repeating yourself. When you have a navigation system, it's nice. It comes to the car. It's nice. But you can't remove it and take it with you if you're traveling. For example, if you have a portable navigation system like your smartphone, basically when you go on holiday, you can have a walkabout with it, you know, or you can take it to a different city, but you can't do it if it's in your car. Now, another one is also the ones that come with the cars. The first year is free. After that, you still have to pay. And what you're paying for, you get it free on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's no reason for it. The last fact, I would say, the last fact why I think navigation should be just taken out. And I was so happy when it happened in one of the premium car companies when they gave me a car last week. That is why I'm talking about this. When I took the car, the first thing they said, oh, by the way, there's no more in-car navigation. I said, what? You know, I was shocked because premium car, they said, you know, it's a feature that costs 4,800 ringgit. We've decided to do without it.
Wait, 4,800 ringgit?
Yes, because this is a premium car and it's voice navigation with a lot of extra features.
Right.
So they said, we've decided to take it out. Most of our customers don't use it. And when they come in for servicing, they actually say, we don't use it. Can you take it out? Because we don't want to keep it running in the system. I would say, just say it's half the price, 2,000. Just go and buy yourself a smartphone.
Right.
And buy yourself some data, and it's much better to use.
So I was asking a colleague of mine in the office, you know, when they last used their in-car navigation. And they said it was fairly recently. They were off on a holiday nearby. They were driving up into Thailand.
Okay.
And they were going to get a ferry from Thailand across to one of the little islands. So they'd driven up through Perlis and up that way up to Sathon in Thailand. And as they got over the border, they'd been using their smartphone all the way up to the border.
Right.
And as soon as, of course, they got to the border, they didn't have a local SIM card for their phone. There was no Wi-Fi around. And so they couldn't use Waze at the time, and they had to rely on the in-car GPS to get
which worked in Thailand.
Yeah, so that was the only time that they'd really used it, and it's the only time that off the top of my head I could think where it might be beneficial is if you're traveling, you know, maybe if you're traveling across Europe, for example, you've got five or six countries linked to one another.
Yes.
Then I could see how it might be something useful.
That's a feature which I didn't think about.
But here you're right. I mean, in Malaysia, if you're driving anywhere around Malaysia, just your smartphone is enough.
Exactly. See, like, even you buy a Perdua now, the Myvi, it comes in car navigation.
Does it really?
Yes. I mean, the high spec model.
Wow,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a great feature to have.
Yeah, yeah.
But the people who have bought the cars, I've asked them, you know, whether they're young teenagers or middle income people or senior citizens, they all say the same thing. I've never used it. And the older people generally hate to use the in car one.
Too confusing.
The one on the phone already is confusing, but, you know, it's made easier with certain companies.
Yeah.
But end of the day, the smartphone.
I think I'd use it just once, just to say that I'd used it.
Yes.
And then after that, of course, I'd be switching to a smartphone.
Right. So I think that car companies should just start taking them off. And then if consumers come and say, no, I want navigation, just give them a handful.
Right. Yeah.
Give them a smartphone and say, here you go. Here you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's $2,400 a bill for it. And here's a prepaid card.
Right.
You can.
Worldwide prepaid. Done.
Exactly. Done.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology, shaping tomorrow's mobility.
That was AT&T here on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9. Moving on now to our car review, of course. Daniel had the wonderful opportunity to drive around in the Hyundai Ioniq. And now you're saying why some Malaysians will not buy the Hyundai Ioniq. What's going on?
No, the reason why I'm saying why Malaysians won't buy is simply because after I test drove this car, and I had it over a long weekend, I had a lot of friends who came over, some neighbors. You know, I live in a very small neighborhood. A lot of terrace houses around me, and you know, neighbors all know I test drive cars for a living. And this car, they all came on and said, "Oh, this is a new Hyundai. Is it electric?" I said, "No, it's hybrid." Because you know, misconception is still there. They don't listen to BFM. They keep going on and on about the car. But even after I share all the wonderful features, the price, the equipment level, and everything else, I think I won't buy it. I'll buy brand X. And this is why I've come up with this sort of review. 8 reasons why Malaysians will not buy the Hyundai Ioniq, even though they like it.
I'm having a look at it now. You carry on.
Okay. Now, number one, which is a very common thing, badge snobbery.
Right.
I'm not saying the Ioniq is a luxury car. I'm not saying Hyundai is a luxury brand. But the thing is, when they look at this brand and this car,
it's not a bad looking car.
Exactly. It's a nice family hatchback. Yeah. It's a 5-door hatchback. But still, they tend to think, you know, I'll pay a little bit more and get something a bit more premium.
It's got that kind of Honda City, Mitsubishi kind of look to it, you know.
Exactly. And it's very well equipped. But never mind. Now we come to economy. You buy a hybrid because you want to save fuel. The Ioniq has got a 1.6-litre engine car, working with a battery pack, of course. That engine is very economical. It's as economical as it gets for a 1.6 car that size, which can carry 5 people and some luggage.
Right.
Okay, and you get the tax breaks. The car is below 100,000 ringgit. And still, people say, no, I'd rather buy something double the price, a base model, because I don't want a Hyundai.
So, hang on. If you're paying less than 100 grand for it,
right,
this is not a base model. This is a good top-end model.
Top-end model, yes. Okay. Now, a lot of people say, oh, you know, after sales hour, they've been here for years. It's under Sime Darby. They've been selling cars for years. They're not going to run away tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you get an 8-year warranty on the battery.
Which is decent,
which is what all the other hybrid guys are giving.
Yeah.
So, what's the problem? Now, if you remember, some years ago, Toyota had a Prius.
Yep.
Not the Prius C, the proper Prius. If you look at the Ioniq and the Prius, they look identical in the shape. Mm. Because most hybrid cars have that sleek hatchback, what I call the dolphin look.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So the Ioniq has that shape. It's got that rear folding seat, so you can put a lot of stuff and everything else. And both are hatchbacks. Now, the Prius sold like hotcakes. People were lining up to buy it at 150,000 ringgit at that time.
But is that, though, because it was like the first real kind of hybrid?
True. But everybody ran out to buy it.
Yeah.
And then when the price came down to about 130, people still ran out to buy it. Now, this is below $100,000. And people are not running out to buy it. So, this is where we go back to the brand. They're looking at the Toyota brand. But Hyundai is one of the top 5 car manufacturers in the world. They're not an overnight brand. The next thing people ask, what about the warranty? So I said, okay, there's an 8-year warranty on the battery. But the car comes with a 5-year, which is standard with everybody. But here's the best part, 300-kilometer warranty.
Mm.
So imagine if you used it daily to go down to Penang, doing a lot of mileage, or maybe even if you're a ride-sharing driver. That kind of mileage, you still have your warranty.
Yeah.
300,000 kilometers or 5 years. So good warranty system. Then they talk about the technology of the car. If you go into the car, everything that you want, entertainment unit, airbags, you know, your typical 10.2, everything is included.
I'm still going to do that.
You're still going to do that. Yeah, still going to do that. All that for below 100,000 ringgit. So I'm thinking now, why are people ignoring the Hyundai Ioniq?
Do you honestly think that the major problem with it is just the brand?
I think it's just the brand.
Mm.
And we're not talking about a brand that's, you know, that was developed 10 years ago.
They're not fly by night, are
exactly.
They? You know.
Exactly. And, you know, it's not a brand that is not backed by a good company. Yeah. Sime Darby is a huge company in Malaysia. They have so many brands under them. They have not walked away from their brands or their commitments to warranties and after sales. So I don't understand what's wrong with buying a Hyundai Ioniq Hybrid.
Give us the specs of it then. What is it?
Okay, it's a four-cylinder petrol engine. It's got a battery pack. It's got 105 brake horsepower, 147 newton meters of torque. So, of course, climbing up a hill in Genting's not a problem.
Yeah.
Six-speed dual-clutch automatic gearbox. It'll do 180 kilometers if you need to go that fast. Less than 100,000 ringgit.
I don't see a problem.
Exactly.
Right. All right, let's do the quick 10-point inspection.
Okay.
Let's go through this quickly. Right. Who's the car for?
I would say it's for anybody who's moving up from a 10-year-old basic Japanese car.
All right. Is it comfortable on the Malaysian roads?
Very comfortable.
Fun to drive? Does it handle corners well?
You know, it's not a hard-nosed sports car, but it'll handle corners. It'll do the job.
Is the engine any good? Does it suit the car?
It's actually a very nice engine. Very quiet, very, 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 very well put together, because you don't feel any strain from the engine even with five people on board.
Is it economical?
It is very economical.
Is the infotainment system any good?
Yes, it is.
Well equipped, USB ports, leather seats, reverse camera.
Like I said earlier, everything is included.
Value for money?
Less than 100,000.
Yeah. Would you recommend it then?
I would recommend it, and I'll recommend it quite highly for people who might even be thinking, I know there are other brands out there that are, you know, like plug-in hybrids costing, you know, 200,000, 220,000. But sometimes you're buying it just for the badge.
Mm.
If you really want to save fuel, save Mother Earth, save yourself some money, you know, take more holidays, $100,000, you really can't go wrong with this car.
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.